Hey, look, we've all been there. Stress from work, restless nights, your mind racing when you're trying to wind down. What if I told you there's a natural way to feel calmer and to sleep better? That's where CBDFX comes in. And let me tell you, they've got this figured out. They've got something for everyone, from sleep gummies to CBD capsules and topicals. Take their CBD and CBD night capsules, for example. These are designed to help you fall asleep quickly and stay asleep throughout the night. They contain CBN, what they call the ultimate relaxation cannabinoid, plus other natural sleep aids. And their original mixed berry CBD gummies have actually won 4 Healthline Best CBD Gummy Awards. They provide gentle, calming effects that boost your overall well-being with a delicious natural berry flavor. CBDFX has been around since 2014, so they know what they're doing. Everything's made right here in the USA with organic hemp. No GMOs, no pesticides, no harmful chemicals, plus third-party lab reports back everything up. Whether you want calm, focus, better sleep, or just an overall wellness boost, CBDFX has something for you. And right now, my listeners can get 40% off your first order with code ZABE at CBDFX.com. Use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, to get 40% off today. Feel the difference with CBDFX.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Right, 52% of the time. You're wrong 48% of the time.
Why didn't you say that before?
Okay, Jimmy, you're off the hook. We got Miami, Cincinnati coming up. Any thoughts?
I certainly do, Fred. I hereby declare Miami to be Smooth Jimmy's lock of the week.
Every paper prints the damn betting line. You know, all anybody talks about is the point spread. Every local TV show prognosticator, every two-bit local columnist, I mean, even the average Joe man on the street, all they talk about is the damn point spread. And you know what? It sucks.
I'm telling you, go to the store, get a six-pack, get yourself a cigar and a roll of toilet paper, because when you see this game, you're going to sh**.
College game of the month, absolutely free.
Meet Stu Finer, nickname The Source.
Listen.
He promises, quote, to piss on your bookie's face.
We got a quarterback picking North Carolina State +4. You can't have that, you know.
I'll just call myself Mr. X. Yep, you can't go wrong with Mr. X.
Let's get ready to gamble.
And get ready to gamble responsibly using my bookie and promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. It is Mr. X time. We've come to that part of the week. We are resetting our sights on the upcoming weekend. And that soundbite, Mr. X, of The Simpsons and Smooth Jimmy, that's Smooth Jimmy's Lock of the Week. That's a direct parody of the great Jimmy the Greek, who was a staple on the CBS pregame shows. And I wondered, what did you think of the throwback to the olden days on the 50th anniversary of CBS's NFL Today? Did you watch any of it?
Nope.
No. Did you see any clips? You want me to send you some clips?
I one of the games, because you know I got about four or five going at once, and during one of them I noticed it was at halftime, and I saw the costumes they were wearing, like 1970s. Right. But I didn't listen to anything. No.
So you remember though, because you're a man of my age bracket. You remember?
I wish.
You. How old are you now?
65.
Okay. We're close. 57, close 65. Enough. You and I remember those days. And you remember just how big it was to see Jimmy the Greek weighing in on who he liked for games. The one thing, though, that was never mentioned on the show was the actual point spread. He just did check marks per each team. And I know I, as a young Redskin fan, would get vehemently pissed off when he chose to pick a Redskin game and didn't give us enough check marks.
Yep. No, it was it didn't have a lot of value, but it was all you could do, and he was the only one doing it, and it was fun.
He was a guy that was heavily involved in the gambling scene before he arrived on the set of NFL Today. And I believe at the time, you know, the league was not real happy about him being part of it, but CBS and their producers said, no, this will help make the show more interesting.
Yeah, and he had the best line ever, and I won't do it justice, but there was some analyst or quarterback or coach, I think it was a coach, that made a, you know, comment about, you know, comparing his pay and said something about which team was going to win. And Jimmy, of course, quipped, how much does he have on the game? Point is, if you don't have anything, shut up, you know?
Right, exactly. So I've got the Jimmy the Greek checklist board.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 11 categories. I didn't recall it having that many categories.
I thought it was 8. Okay.
They were. Team speed. This is in order that they are listed, so I assume this was Jimmy the Greek's preferred, like his most important stuff. Okay, so team speed. I'm just here. Let's see how it shakes out. Here's the sequence on the big board. Team speed, quarterback, defensive secondary, defensive front, O-line, running game, special teams, discipline, kicking game, home team, and then the famous intangibles.
Yeah, I remember that. I think that's been added, because what's the difference between kicking game and special team? I don't remember it that way.
Well, special teams, well, punting is not the kicking game, so punting.
Sure.
As well as kickoffs, covering kickoffs, returning
kickoffs. Hence the word
kickoffs.
Kicking games. Kicking game is the special teams. Fine.
Okay. Maybe he meant kicking game. But the funniest thing was, okay, so what's an intangible? By definition, it can't be tangibled. It doesn't exist. It's not anything. It's in the ether. And I don't seem to recall Jimmy the Greek explaining why he would give a check mark to one team on intangibles.
I think at my recollection, and come on, I was probably 10, so but my recollection is it would be the precursor to things like letdown spot or motivation.
Okay.
This team really needs the win, so it's an intangible. This team, you know, is that was my recollection, but hey, it's been 50 plus years. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, but if there's one thing you've taught me over the years is don't fall for the this team needs it more trap.
Oh, yeah.
Needing it more ain't got nothing to do with nothing in this league.
No, it's a lot like Mike Tyson. Everybody has a plan until someone punches you in the mouth.
Like
you don't need it until the guy's running you over. Then you suddenly step it up and play.
Well, yeah, here's the ultimate sign of, okay, like baseball, we're in the final week, right? And you would think some teams like the Marlins would be so packed up and ready to go home, and yet what are they doing beating the Phillies last night? A team that is trying to dig and claw back the number one overall seed. Now, that's a totally different sport, baseball, but you would think if ever there was a sport that would say, well, the bad teams are just going to roll over late, baseball continues to prove that, well, no, it's a game and they're athletes, and when they get inside that box and they face 99 miles an hour and don't want to get hit in the face like that kid Fry got hit last night by Skubal, brutal, trying to bunt, they're going to compete as hard as they can, and you don't know what the outcome's going to be. It's the same thing in every sport.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I disagree. I've always felt like physical games, like football,
you
don't sit there and get your ass whooped.
Okay,
you have
so
to
you
fight
think
back.
Teams in baseball roll over? Because I've seen a lot of results.
No, they do not at all.
Oh, okay.
That's the least rollover is my point.
Oh,
and in basketball,
okay.
You know, you may not play defense in the NBA when you don't care.
Right.
But I've always said motivation has nothing to do with hitting a curveball.
Right.
You know, if you're in the box, it doesn't matter if what your team's record is. You're in the box, you're going to try to hit the ball. Yeah. You don't say, well, it's September and we're out of the playoff race. I guess I'll swing softer. I mean, you may not play defense in the NBA. You may not, you know, get downfield and block, but you don't not try to hit.
Right. Right. And yeah, a lot of these guys are fighting for jobs next year. Well, so sure, they're gonna play their hardest. Okay, I want to start with this. Cut one. Things you don't see or things you did not see in the NFL back in the 80s. I saw Myles Garrett. I could send you the clip. You might have seen it, but it doesn't matter. I'll describe it here. Myles Garrett beat left tackle Rasheed Wallace of the Packers with what looked like a basketball Euro step. He went right foot jab, left foot shuffle, and was literally past his guy blocking him in two steps with nary. I mean, maybe Rasheed Walker got one hand on him. That was about it. Jordan Love had to run for his life immediately out of the pocket. I would put a bounty up for anybody who can find an old 80s clip of a defensive end, even the best of the best, that would have a move that devastatingly unstoppable. I believe the evolution of the game in certain areas is so far past what we once had. Like, it was a freak play. I go, no one used to be able to do this. You know,
yeah,
used to at least get hands on a guy rushing from the defensive edge position.
Yeah, usually when that happens, it's a, quote, missed assignment. Oh, I thought you had him. No, I thought you had him. But that dude that you're describing had him, just couldn't lay a finger on him.
How about the fact that back in the 80s, the only team that ran the shotgun was Dallas?
Dallas.
Yeah. That's it. And then teams started to go, okay, maybe we should do this. Teams didn't run no huddle back in the 80s. Teams had very little motion pre-snap back in the 80s. Like, you'd watch and go, oh, so you're just lined up there? You're allowed to move around, you know, but you're not going to, okay?
Yeah, why wouldn't I have started there in the first place?
So you're just going to sit there for 10 seconds waiting to say hike, and you're going to let the defense size up your formation there. Okay. So then more teams started using the shotgun. Then more teams started using the no huddle. Late 80s, it was Sam Weish in Cincinnati with Boomer Esiason that went real turbo and a lot of no huddle stuff. Then Gibbs in the 80s as well introduced more and more motion and using an H-back in the backfield to sort of do some things. 2012 was the introduction of the college concept of the pistol, which is a half shotgun, so it's a short shotgun-type snap. And, of course, you had running quarterbacks like Kaepernick and RG3, and they're using now this mesh handoff and the zone read stuff, which has continued to evolve. So I'm just trying to ask you, what things do you think about when you watch the game today and go, they never had that back in the 80s?
Okay, I got a couple things that popped to mind. First of all, when you said that part, Joe Gibbs was first and last in two things. He was last to do the shotgun. And yes, you remember why? He always said, the first two seconds, I want my quarterback's eyes down the field, watching the defense, not looking for a football.
Right.
But he was first on.
But by the way, he also tried it like once, and Theismann fumbled, and it spooked him off of it ever since. And then when he came back the second time, and we're talking 2005, was it? 2004, 2005-ish. Andy Poland and I would have him on once a week. And I was the guy, the young punk radio guy, badgering the legend, Joe Gibbs. Hey, how about the shotgun? Hey, how about the shotgun? So it became a running gag. First, like, 4 weeks of the season, his first year back, he finally snapped, and Joe Gibbs snapping is the most polite Southern gentleman way. Yeah. He cackled and said, I'm going to put you back in the shotgun, Zabe.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I don't want to be in the shotgun. Put your quarterbacks back there, because the whole league was using it.
Yep.
Now teams, a lot of teams don't have quarterbacks that feel comfortable under center because they were never under center in college.
And then they say when they get first and goal on the one, well, he's not used to taking snaps under center. So what? I hate the shotgun from the one. It makes no sense. But the thing that Gibbs was first on in the 80s was he was the first one to take out the second running back. You always had a fullback and a halfback.
Mm-hmm.
And he took him out and replaced him, as you said, with the H-back.
A tight end.
And it used to be, oh my gosh, is Riggins going to get it up the middle or is Joe Washington going to sweep? The defense doesn't know which running back is going to get the ball.
Right.
And Joe Gibbs was the first one to say, whichever one does not get the ball has nothing to do on this play. I would rather replace him with a good tight end blocker than a guy who doesn't get the ball.
And let you're like, know,
oh, that kind of makes sense.
Right. We'll let you know that if it's a run, which is still a coin flip because it could be a pass, but if it's a run, yes, you know who's going to get it. But the problem is we've got an extra guy in there who's a much better blocker than shrimpy little Joe Washington.
Well, this is, and when you said this, this is interesting because I kind of have a reverse of that of what you don't see. Well, maybe this is what you're saying. You know what you didn't see in the 70s and 80s?
What?
And I'm not trying to play the, in the old days it was great. My kids hate hearing that. But no running back ever ran out of bounds. What they did as they got to the side, it was their job to lower their shoulder and get one more yard or two more yards. And I'm watching the Sunday night game this week, and I think I'm on the phone with X4, and all of a sudden he goes, oh my God, did you just see that? Because Scataboo was on the sideline, and instead of stepping out of bounds, he lowered his shoulder and got about a yard and a half. And I thought to myself, X4, who's 24 years old, has never seen that. And that's what running backs had to do. Why would you go out of bounds when you could get one more yard? That's your job. And you know who the first one to do it was? And he was criticized.
Franco Harris.
Franco Harris. Why would you go out of bounds, Franco? You could have got one more yard. He was the first guy to understand the rule, business decision.
Right. 1 yard is
and
not
now
worth
one guy lowers
hurt.
His shoulder. Scataboo lowers his shoulder, and they think it's something brand new.
Well, you lower your shoulder as a running back, you get fined by the league. Like Saquon Barkley got fined $48,000. $48,000. Super Bowl champ, cover of Madden, you know, video game, you know, face of the league, $48,000 on a play that was not flagged because he was coming up in the open field against a defender and he slightly lowered his helmet for protection and so that he can deliver some punishment himself. And the NFL's like, we're going to take this out of your check. The league regularly steals from players on Tuesday and Wednesday of the week.
I don't care what the rules are. I'm not sure people know the rules. I used to get frustrated when these professional commentators would say something. You're like, yeah, that's not the rule. They'd get it wrong, and you wonder if they're just showing up Sundays. I swear, on Sunday, within a matter of 5 minutes, and I can't tell you the game, I'm watching a game, and somebody lost his balance in the a linebacker position, was getting blocked, was going down, and as he did, he managed to turn and make contact with a running back also going down. They hit helmet to helmet, maybe a foot off the ground because they were both going down.
Right.
And he's immediately flagged for, the announcers say, oh, he's not a defenseless player there. That should not have been a flag. He's not a defenseless receiver. And I'm like, okay. And literally 3 minutes later, they went to the ref analyst on one of the other games, and they said, look, it looks like he hit him in the shoulder there, not the helmet. Why is that a flag? And he said, as soon as you lower your head, it doesn't matter what you hit. It's a flag. And I'm like, what is a flag? It couldn't have been. Now, granted, one was a professional color guy, and one was the referee analyst telling us the rules, and one of them is... I mean, they couldn't have been more like, what are you doing? I don't know if these guys know the rules or it's just built into their salary. X amount in fines.
They're atrocious. The end of game clock management, down and distance stuff to be properly analyzed by most network analysts is a horror show. They don't know. Yeah. They botch it all the time. When you and I and every other fan out there is going, okay, here we are. First and 10, there's 2:20 left. Other team has one timeout. Here's the whole situation. And we can lay it out chapter and verse because this is all we do is we watch these ending of games every single week.
And you play Madden football.
Every single week, right. And our money is relying on the coaches adequately navigating all of this stuff. Actual analysts are completely terrible about it. I saw it. One other thing that I had to run by you, didn't know if you saw it. This was quite amazing to me. So first of all, two things. One is, are you aware of the Surrender Index account on Twitter?
No.
Follow it. It's good. You'll like it. Okay. So it's an account that analyzes go, no go, fourth down decisions.
Oh, right. I've heard of that. I've
so
heard
it's called the Surrender Index 90, and it rates it according to the numbers. Last week, Kevin Stefanski of the Browns punted on fourth and four at the plus 45 in a 0-0 game against a team that was favored by 8. I'm like, you pussy. If you're going to punt here, if you really think you're so shitty offensively that it's not worth going for it as you're approaching scoring position, okay. And so Surrender Index, I think, ranked that in the 90th percentile of bad decisions by the numbers so far this year. That was thing number one. Thing number two, I saw, I was gobsmacked. So Vrabel in New England went for it on fourth and short from his own 15.
Yeah, that was bad. And he got it, of course, which doesn't justify it.
But
three plays later, you punt anyway.
Is that what they did?
Well, probably.
Okay, did you see?
No, actually, they probably fumbled. It was probably the Patriots. They fumbled every possession, but go ahead.
They did. Did you see the play he called to get the first down?
Yeah. Didn't he run wide?
A toss sweep wide. So I'm like, holy shit, you got 1 yard, and you're running a toss sweep where the back is catching the ball 5 yards behind the line to gain. Bold strategy, Cotton. He did it again later in the game. Same type of play, this time run to the near side. It also worked. And all I could think about was, that's the idiot at third base hitting on a dealer four and it working out for him.
Yeah. So. That's the classic risk reward. And I don't like that that strategy chart, whatever you called it. Because I feel like what is – now, see, I'm on the opposite side of you on the Browns because I'm a believer and you have to tailor it to the game.
Oh, come on.
You're the Cleveland Browns.
Come on.
They're playing great defense. Great defense. Their offense is atrocious. Okay. Punt it to the 10, you'll get it back in three plays.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. So you know what happened after that? They punted into the end zone. Duh.
Okay.
So all they netted all of 24 yards of field position. They then stopped the Packers 3-and-out because the Packers could not block Myles Garrett or anybody.
Right.
And they got the ball back. They got it back at like their own 25. And had they not done that, they might have gotten the ball back at their own 20 if it was a touchback on a punt by the Packers. Like, you just don't know. I'm just saying anything 4th and 5 or less becomes much more convertible. And if you're in the plus side of the field, what the fuck do you got to lose? So
I guess I'm a believer in they like to say, you got to show confidence in your offense. You know what? Sometimes you got to be smart enough to not have confidence in your offense.
Yeah.
Those guys don't go, hey, coach likes us. Now I feel better. I mean, their offense sucks, you know, and that's like telling the kid who bats 12th in Little League to have confidence when he's facing a fireballer. He doesn't have confidence. And you know why? He's going to strike out.
I know. You and I can say that. You and I know that. But if you're the coach of the team, you have to believe that, hey, we're at least competent. You know, like you gotta buy into maybe we can do something good here. Otherwise, then just quit the season.
Good way to lose your job. Bottom line is just win, baby. Yeah. Right?
All right. So any other things that you didn't see in the 80s? I'd love to hear people's submissions, and I'll make sure to get some of those emails read into the record on Friday's show. You know football, and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet
and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
A mochi moment from Mark, who writes, I just want to thank you for making GLP-1s affordable. What would have been over $1,000 a month is just $99 a month with Mochi. Money shouldn't be a barrier to healthy weight. 3 months in, and I have smaller jeans and a bigger wallet. You're the best. Thanks, Mark. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Mark is a Mochi member compensated for his story.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Cut to sample size, sample size, sample size. We're 3 weeks into the NFL season. We've got enough of a sample to make a very small, wet snowball of conclusions, right? We've got just enough snow, slushy as it is, to make a snowball of, hey, this team's doing this, that team's doing that. But we need to pump our brakes and remember, it's only 3 weeks. Your sample size of data is still woefully inadequate for any grand conclusions.
Sure. I mean, you got to learn, but you're right.
There are trends evolving that will bear out over the course of the season. I'm not saying that the sample size results so far are necessarily wrong, but we are so, you know, everyone now, there's so much content, so much analysis going on social media and whatnot, and it's great. It's a paradise for content for those who love football. But people get carried away, and they're 3 weeks in, oh, this is what I know because here's what the numbers say. Well, you got 3 weeks of numbers, and there's three opponents that played the team that has the numbers. Were they three good teams, three bad teams, three in the middle? How did it go? And on and on and on. Like, here's one example. So the Packers cut kick returner, wide receiver Mecole Hardman, formerly of the Chiefs. One of the worst pairs of hands in the league this side of Quentin Johnson of the Chargers, who, by the way, is having a breakout year.
He's having a heck of a year.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. So Mecole Hardman was washed when they signed him for basically no money in the spring. I said as such. There were some Packer fans like, no, he could be a good addition. He could return punts.
He can stretch the defense.
Yeah, right.
Unless they realize they don't have to cover him.
Right. They're like, no, he can return punts. And I'm like, okay, great. So doesn't make the final 53, but gets put on the practice squad. He's on the practice squad. The Packers' punt returns to date are like near the bottom of the league in yards per return. Mind you, sample size. Like, we don't know how many punts that is, what part of the field they were. Were they good punts that pinned the guy in the corner? How was coverage? Whatever. But they're like, we're last in punt cover in punt returns. Why don't we give them a shot? Well, they cut Mecole Hardman instead of giving him a shot. When every fan's like, we should let him return punts, they're like, no, we're actually cutting him. And I said today on my radio show, I go, I know we all want to think we know better than the team, because occasionally we do, but most of the time they know better because they're the ones seeing the guy in practice. They're the ones watching the guy in meetings and asking him, do you know this coverage? Like, they know more than we do most of the time.
Yeah, I don't know how he would do, but philosophically, I have a hard time taking a receiver who seems to drop every
passes, right?
And saying, I got an idea. Let's have you catch punts instead. What, are they easier to catch?
No.
And
if I'm not mistaken, I believe he fumbled one in the preseason, which would have been enough for me to go, okay, I've seen enough. But and the other thing too is that I said, okay, how many punt returns are there for touchdowns per year in the league? Seven? League-wide?
Like if your team has one or two punt returns for a touchdown, you're really cooking on the year. And so therefore, how important is it really? Other than just don't fumble it and make sure to catch them when they're outside the 10 so they're not easily downed at the one. That's all your job to me is. Everything else is gravy. Lucky and they gravy.
And they pretty much suck at knowing how to when to not catch them near the goal line.
They kind of do. They kind of do suck, and they forget. And I mean, hey, how about the one guy, forget what team it was, that forgot the rules on kickoffs.
Oh, jeez.
And let the ball go by him, and it turned out to be a touchdown. That was like week one, I think it happened.
Anyway. Yeah.
It'll come to me.
It's changed because now when it goes in the end zone, they blow it dead, and it used to be a live ball, but I think it touched him on the way by, and he didn't go after it. And it's like, that's a different game. Right, that's a muff. That's a muff, not a touchback.
All right, before we get into this week's gambling and some of the spreads, including there's the largest load of lumber we've had this year, 16.5 for the Bills and Saints. It may be the largest load of lumber all year long. Before we get into that, how about the anatomy of a bad beat? The Eagles over the Rams.
Well, okay. Let me tell you how that works from the eye of a gambler who has seen this movie before and can always see the beat coming. Okay, I didn't have that. X2 had that as his pick of the week, the Rams, +3.5. Well, of course, as you know, the Rams are up 26-7. They're cruising. Things start to go bad late. Eagles are cutting it. And when they cut it to 5 at 26-21, a guy like me looks at that and says, okay, the way we lose this is they score here, they make the two-pointer, go up 3, Rams tie it, goes to overtime, we lose by 6. So I'm thinking, even let them score, just don't give them the 2. Well, the Eagles score to go up 1. They miss the 2. So you say,
which helps cool, even further.
We're safe. All we need to do now is avoid the pick six strip sack fumble in the last 30 seconds. Instead, the Rams move the ball, get the game-winning field goal. I don't care if it goes in or misses. It doesn't matter to me. Yes, I don't like Philly and their tush-push, but I'd soon it go in, but I don't really care if it misses. The only thing you can't... So then when it's blocked, you're like, okay, fall on the ball. Fall on the ball. No, you don't pick it up and run 60 with zeros on the clock to win that game by 7 that they had no business winning by more than 1-3.
So are you implying it was not a bad beat? Because you said, well, let me give you my...
Oh, it's horrific.
Okay, yeah. Horrific. But you're saying this happens, it'll happen again, and this is the price you pay. You will win on the other end of this, and you won't think twice about it. You'd be like, well, I deserve that one. I had the right side. Yeah. No, you didn't. You had the wrong side. 26-7. There is at no point in which the spread of 3.5 was truly threatened. The Eagles
not until there were zeros.
2 minutes to go, and the Eagles are down to 4th and goal, and they score on 4th and goal. Then, as you mentioned, they missed the 2-point conversion, helping out even further,
keeping us out of overtime. Right? Overtime is never the friend of an underdog.
What a beat that was.
Yeah. Well, it was good to see, though, that the league really did crack down on the tush push, as they said.
Yeah, with the Saints. They called the Saints for a false
start. No. I mean, they said they were going to crack down on it. And the first one of the day, the announcer did a great job diagramming the false start. Oh, no, it was the red zone dude showing it, saying, look at this. All week, they said, we're going to crack down, we're going to crack down. And the first time they run it, the guard fires off the ball before everyone else. And they're like, yeah, that was too hard to see. Come on.
So when you say good job by the league, you're being sarcastic.
Oh gosh, yes.
Yes, right.
They let them line up incorrectly. They let them false start. Mm-hmm. That's the week of the crackdown?
I know.
God.
Yeah.
I think I've given this the analogy of the refs. You understand their reluctance to call a 6th foul on LeBron James. Mm-hmm. They won't call it till they're 1,000% sure so that it's not on ESPN all night going, oh, look at this, it fouled him out. He should have never done that. Anything close, you just say, I'll let it go. They're afraid to make a mistake and call them
wrong and say, oh, you guys are against the Eagles. So instead, they keep not calling it, just like LeBron's sixth.
Yeah. All right, there's only two teams that have covered the spread in all three games this year. That'd be the Colts and the Chargers. And according to Action Network, the Chargers are a six-point favorite against the Giants this week. And the undefeated Colts are getting 3.5 at the Rams. One might think, if they were trying to be clever, under the assumption of, well, nobody covers the spread every week. And besides, the spread is a dynamic thing. It starts shrinking and shrinking the more a team covers it because the books don't want to get beat. So if we're already three games in and they've covered all three, why don't I pull this little trick? I'll bet $10 on these two teams this week to not cover. And if they don't, then I'll just double it next week and double it next week. The so-called martingale strategy. And eventually I'll make some money. Yay.
I can hold that for you.
Terrible, terrible idea. Well, I ran this through Grok about the martingale strategy and why it's a bad idea. It's because consecutive losing streaks require essentially exponentially larger bets. So a string of just 10 losses, starting with a $10 bet, would require risking over 10 grand on the final bet just to win $10 back. Few people have the bankroll or the nerve to sustain such a progression. Also, each round of a game is like a roulette or coin toss as an independent event. Your quarter has no memory of what it landed on last. Past outcomes have no influence on future results, and cold streaks in picking against the spread, Mr. X, can most certainly last well past 10 games.
Yeah, I didn't know it by that name.
You've never heard of the martingale strategy?
No, I did not know it by that name. I certainly know that strategy just because it's simply something I thought of many, many years ago, but I didn't know it had a name to it.
Well, in Vegas, if you try that with a supposed blackjack. 50-50 game, either blackjack or roulette, which are really not 50-50 because there's a house edge built into each of those. So that
close
makes
enough, though.
That, yeah, close enough. The table limits are there for a reason.
That's for that reason. Right. I've tried to explain the reason that you have a 550 or a 10, 250, whatever the number. The reason for the max, a lot of people think it's to separate out the little players from the big players. No, it's to avoid just what you said. Because if you walked in there with $10,000 and wanted to play at the $5 table, you could apply this strategy and win. That's right. Why they have a max, so you can only lose five bets in a row. You can't double after that.
The martingale strategy came from 18th century France, in which it originally referred to a strap used to control a horse's head movement. The term was adopted in gambling contexts due to its association with a system of betting that attempts to control or recover losses through a structured approach. But don't try that, kids. You are playing with fire. And as Mr. X likes to say, If you've got the 10 grand, why do you need the $10 so much?
Exactly. No, and that's the thing. When you apply that, and you say, okay, well, in football, there's no max like at a blackjack table, so it should work. But when you've lost five or six in a row, you know what your chances of the seventh one is? 50-50. And now 50, you're playing. Right. You're playing. Let's see, if you did your $10 bet, your sixth one, now you're laying out $320 when you're a $10 player. That's, you know what? You do lose six in a row from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it does happen.
You had a good week in the pros last week. I believe you went 5-1 total.
Four and one college, 4-1 pro. It was a great week. Yes.
Right. I noticed.
But of course, the college one I missed was the most painful of the week, just because of your Wisconsin entourage.
Well, I mean, when you were all in on them, even though it looked, because Billy Edwards, their starter, did start. But then he left after a couple games because his knee was all fucked up. But they're a terrible program, and I would have strongly encouraged you not to throw in with them, even if Edwards was good to go.
Yeah,
I didn't want to ruin your fun. I didn't want to say they stink. Don't bet on them. Okay.
No, that was my only loss of the week in college, though.
So that said, I saw that you gave out a teaser in the pros. And I'm curious. I did not know that you were pro teaser. Could you express your thoughts on how and where you don't mind playing a teaser? Many people think teasers are absolute death.
Well, there's a reason they came up with the name. They tell you it's not a good bet, and you don't listen.
Okay.
Yeah, good question. My rule on that is I've always, well, there's two things. One, I've always said I'm a better teacher than student. And I don't always follow my rules. And my rule is, yeah, teasers are terrible and teasers are stupid and never do it except for when I do.
Okay, fair enough.
But I will do it. Okay, the time I will do it usually is on a slim week where you just don't have enough games. You don't have enough action. You don't have games you like and you want something. Okay. That's part of it. I mean, if the menu is loaded with great picks, and I'm never going to look at it. But, you know, you get into a Thursday or a Monday night game that people really want to play and the pick is not there, but the teaser strategy is there, then I'll go there. And it doesn't fit often. I will only tease teams at home that are laying 6 to 8 points because you're basically teasing them down to just winning the game. And if I find two of those that I really think will win the game and throw out the points, then I will do it from time to time. And what usually somebody will brag that they won a teaser and both the teams win easy. And I say, well, why didn't you just parlay them and make way more money? The teaser is really only successful if you needed the points.
Right.
Because if you didn't need the points, you know, you could have had a much better payday when both teams win. This week, the teaser was needed on that crazy Tampa Bay game where they won by whatever on the last play field goal. And instead of laying the 6 or 7, we had them just to win outright, and it won. The second half of the teaser, Seattle won by a million or whatever, so he didn't need it. But that's when you feel good that one of the two legs of the teaser needed the points.
Okay.
And that was one of my top plays last week because I liked Tampa and Seattle to both win the game.
All right, this weekend in college, blockbuster weekend.
Yeah.
And I want to take a quick look at some of these big games. Alabama, Georgia, probably the biggest one on the board. Georgia's -3 at home. Penn State, Oregon is right there with it. That's Penn State -3.5 at Happy Valley. Then you've got LSU, Ole Miss. Ole Miss is 1.5 at home. This just after his daughter hard launched her boyfriend on Instagram, who's a linebacker for LSU. Pretty amazing that your daughter is banging a dude on the team you're trying to beat this coming Saturday. And then you've got a wide slate of really good, juicy B-sides, including Auburn at Texas A&M. Aggies are -6.5. Ohio State versus Washington. Ohio State is 8.5. At home. And then Indiana, Iowa is a low key interesting game, given how many points Indiana scored last week and Iowa being the live, laugh, punt program of the Big Ten. And then USC, Illinois, as if that was not enough for you. Oh, and Utah, West Virginia, if that was not enough for you.
Well, those two are both coming off bad, real bad games. But the Iowa-Indiana line moved as much on a Saturday as a line can move as Iowa's getting their ass whooped.
Right.
Or was it the Indiana
line? Well, Indiana was destroying Illinois, and they
put up a 50-burger, so
that's probably what moved the line. It's currently Indiana -7.5. What was it prior to last Saturday? Do you know?
Wait a second. Where is it? I'm getting Illinois
you're getting your eyes mixed up.
My eyes are crossed.
Your eyes are way crossed. Indiana, Iowa, Illinois.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Illinois game this week. Who do they play? They play
USC.
I think that they were like a 1.5 point spread. And as they were getting their ass whooped by Indiana, it bumped up to 6.5.
Yeah. Iowa actually.
It was like Illinois was getting exposed by Indiana. Yeah, there it is. That line went from 1.5 to 6.5 during the game Saturday.
Damn.
It was like the books were going, hold on, Illinois sucks.
Right. Wait a minute. We might have way overcooked them.
Before this game's final, we need to change this line.
Right. Rutgers, yes. Or Iowa did actually score 38 last week against Rutgers, so at least there's that. But, yeah, there's just so much good stuff. Give me a general philosophy. I know you're not going to probably release your picks until earlier on the weekend. It is Wednesday, after all. But just a quick thought on some of these lines in the monster college football weekend of the year.
Well, you won't like this, but what I would say is I like to watch those games for fun. College, when you have 100 college games, the biggest and best, most fun game to watch is not the one I usually bet. It was like so last week. I'm on Delaware. I'm on Delaware as a money line dog. I'm on Kennesaw State.
Why and
those
how do
games
you
are
get
too
those?
Hard.
So why and how do you get those angles? Because I know you're not fucking watching those teams.
Well, I watched a lot of them last week.
Well, you watched it once you had the money on them. I'm saying you don't watch Delaware prior to betting on them. So where do you get that angle from?
Yeah, well, I'm not being coy, but there is just many things. A lot of it is betting data and watching the public and watching letdown spots. And just, you know, there's a lot of numbers analysis that have to mix in with the actual talent. Okay. And usually you just don't find that in Alabama, Georgia, where I feel good. But yeah. I will find and feel good about Kennesaw or some unknown team that's better than people think they are. You have to dig deep in college, which is a great thing to say. You know what? I'm saying this now because last week I was 4-1. I didn't say it the week before when I was, 2-4. You know? So I get that.
Right.
But.
Okay. Well, anyway, you're right that there's a lot of heat, there's a lot of eyes, there's a lot of data, a lot of known results between, say, an Alabama and a Georgia. Not so much once you start digging way down the pile of T-shirts, that is, games you could bet on in college football on a Saturday.
Well, let me throw this at you. You said earlier about the sample size and NFL, but I was when you were talking about that, I was thinking about college, and I think I have maybe the best and the worst pick of the year in my preseason college. That's the way. How does the Clemson national title pick look?
Ooh.
Ouch.
Yeah. You're not They're the only horrible. One. They're horrible, and Dabo is crashing out right now, as the kids like to say, and it's going to be.
Yeah. I may not be the only one, but none of the other guys are sharing that bet with me. So I'm, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still paying it all myself. But I'll combine that with, how do I also feel with one of the top season totals being Vanderbilt over 4.5, and they're 4-0 laying 21
Dude,
this weekend?
That is phenomenal right there. Talk about you want your over-unders to be in the barn with the hay all dry well before the season's over. This hay is going to be put in the barn at a record early date.
It might be the Randy Moss record that I think to this day, I always claim that the best season total pick ever was, I guess it was Moss's rookie year. If it wasn't his rookie, it was his breakout year when we took the Vikings over 7 and they went 15-1. And that was the year Moss went nuts and broke on the scene. And it was like, you don't usually win NFL over-unders by 8 games.
All right, a couple more
but
things.
Vanderbilt's going to be close.
A couple more things real quick, and then we'll recap week 3 in the NFL and look ahead to this weekend. In college, the Rover and over hit again. What was it?
Yeah, there was only a couple of ties, but somebody won last week. I think it was LSU.
Okay.
Yeah, LSU versus, I don't know, some horrific
And your
team.
Note your note was see you in December. What does that mean?
Oh, there's no more. You know, everybody watches those first 3 weeks of Rovers and go, yeah, I want to get on this. Well, there aren't any more.
The Rover and over season is as short as Mackinac peaches when they're
usually
in season.
Usually that last week in December, you might have them again. Some teams schedule a shit game at the end of the year. But usually by week 3, people are going, hey, you know what? This thing works. I mean, we hit 3, thanks to Penn State doing it twice. And then people go, you know what? I like that theory. I'm like, well, we'll talk next September because you're not going to see them anymore, I don't think.
All right. Baseball. You have my rule on the closest pennant race and need one win to go 21-5.
Oh, yeah. First of all, it's a pet peeve of mine that every August somebody writes an article and talks about, wow, look how tight the pennant race is. It's called August. It's always close in August. And by September, second week of September, somebody's up seven in a meaningless games. This year is the closest I've ever seen. I mean, literally with 1 week to go in the American League, nobody clinched, and you could be first place or out of the playoffs. And I don't ever remember that in the last week of the season. Now, Toronto has clinched.
Right.
And the Yanks are, I think, a win from clinching. So they've separated in, but they're still battling for the one seed. But literally anybody else could win their division or sit home. And I've never seen streaks like this. I mean, you know, when you're 11 years old and you're like, a Guardian fan, and you're like, all we have to do is win 9 out of 10, and if Detroit loses 9 out of 10, we're right in it. And you're like, son, that never happens. Well, it's happening. It's happening this year. The streaks are crazy. I just pulled it up. What, the Guardians have won 9 out of 10, the Mariners have won 9 out of 10, while the Tigers have absolutely, they dropped 7 in a row. You don't pick up 7 games in 7 days in baseball. You just don't. But this year you do. The Astros and Tigers have just collapsed and are now, you know, it's a battle from literally slot 1 through 7 with 6 making it, which is what they write every August, and it never happens until this year.
I would say if you're an NL team that's very hungry for a World Series, like the Brewers, this is your year, because it doesn't look like there's any exceptional team in the AL. But it's baseball. It's very quirky. What is the one win to go 21-5? What are you going to be 25-1 in?
No, that's, you know, when we track all those years where we tracked on your show, and I still track it on the site, my best bet in MLB.
Best of the best of season totals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If
what
the
do
Red
you,
Sox
what do you need?
One win out of the last 5 games from Boston, and yes, I know we're jinxing it by saying that.
Oh, total jinx.
Yeah, but if they hit, then on the 26 years I've done it with you, that'll be 21-5.
So pretty good return,
hopefully
right?
Get one more win, and hopefully it's tonight. If it's not tonight, then I'll start hedging against it, because I know they can go 0-5.
Pretty good. All right, week 3, how do the NFL shake out? Favorites, dogs, public money, over-unders?
Well, I started to say that the favorites went 9-7, and I thought I was looking at last week's notes, but then I realized it's the third straight week this year, the NFL, the favorites have gone 9-7, so there's that.
So this is a public breeze right now blowing, a predominantly public player breeze, or a Johnny Square player breeze, because the favorites are covering more than they're not each week.
Yeah, I don't know how great 9-7 is, but it beats
it's
losing.
Winning.
Okay. It is winning.
I said it was a breeze, Mr. X. I didn't say it was a wind. It's a light public breeze right now.
Sure, I'll give you that. And the winner, the dogs that won last week, though, were the crap dogs, which is why it was a good week for me, because I'm usually on those teams like Cleveland and Chicago when they were 0-2 and looking terrible. 4 of the dogs won outright: Carolina, Cleveland, Chicago, Detroit, while Miami, Jets, and Arizona were covers. The home teams also went 9-7. There hasn't been any really up or down weeks yet on that. And the over-unders went 8-8 again. The public didn't do well. Well, 3-4 is actually good for the public, my tracking. NCAA public was real bad. The 3 of the top 4 most bet teams that were touchdown favorites all got beat outright. So the public didn't do well in college. But I don't usually track that as closely as NFL public. Yeah, we can call my hot start officially over, because we always talked about that. The start this week, 4-1, 4-1. In the NFL now, I'm 10-3 and 4-0 in my double up picks, which leads you to the Monty Python theory, right? Run away.
Run away. We'll see. Okay, let's go ahead and make a pick for this week. Thursday night's game, Seahawks at the Cardinals, Amazon Prime. Cardinals are 1.5-point home dogs. Both teams are 2-1. Here's my angle. Here's why I'm taking the Cardinals, okay? In games involving 2 ornithological nicknames, Seahawks and Cardinals, they're birds, with one team being a made-up bird, Seahawk, it's not a real thing, it's a made-up name, and another team with a bird that doesn't exist in the area that they play. There's no Cardinals in Arizona, the desert. That's a upper Midwest and East Coast bird feeder bird, the Cardinal. In those games involving quarterbacks under 5'11", in a dome or retractable dome before Halloween. Home team getting points is a very strong system play. I'm taking the Cardinals plus 1.5 Thursday night.
I have a very hard time arguing with any of those.
Of course
points.
Not. It's a great thorough research trend. It's as good as it gets.
I think the Seahawks have looked pretty good, so I'm with you. I'll take the Cardinals. I'll take that. I was wrong last week again, and you were right, so you're hot on this, and I'm not. But I will agree with you. I'll take the Cardinals, and I like that game to go under, too.
All right. As always, you want more from Mr. X, go to his website, callmemrx.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at justcallmemrx. As always, bet with your head, no over it, and only bet as much as you can afford to win, and do it responsibly, and make sure to do it using promo code Zabe at mybookie.com. All right, Mr. X, we'll see you next week.
Take care. See ya.
You know football, and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over a half a million dollars to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sportsbook that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.